Good evening, my fellow Wastelanders. This is DJ Pony.
Ow!
Reporting to you live from the doghouse. Looks like I might have pushed my luck a bit too far last time. Ten Pony Management was not happy to have heard the voice of the ghoul Dr. Greenshift being transmitted from their tower. Poor Homage was startled by our proactive security personnel when they showed up to apprehend the lovable bag of bones. But, guessing that this might happen, I made sure to have the interview with our glowing guest from Dusselhoof recorded earlier, since there was no evidence of him actually having been here. There was simply nothing they could do. By the time I was done broadcasting the interview, I'd received a very professional-looking cease and desist letter posted on my door. It had the fancy letterhead and everything. Now, you may be asking yourself, "Wow, DJ Pony, how do you get away with these shenanigans?" Well, my lovely listening audience, while they may hear me as some loudmouth buck with too much time on my hooves, I actually do a lot of good for Ten Pony Tower and its residents. Besides spinning the discs that get them swinging like the world never ended, my arrangement here comes with quite a few perks. You see, I have a natural aptitude at using a little thing called the magic of friendship, so when I've stepped on one too many tails, I can usually phone a friend to help me out of a jam. And this friend just so happens to be my next guest for Confessions of a Wasteland Pony. So, why don't I introduce her? Please welcome Rose Petal, the Duchess of Mainchester.
Thank you, DJ Pony. It is lovely to be here.
The Duchess is one of the most gifted designers of pre-war fashion and architecture that the Wasteland is blessed with. She is also much too beautiful to be limited to a medium like radio.
Always the smooth talker. You already have me in your studio. Stop trying so hard.
Sorry about that, folks. I think my heart just skipped a beat. The Duchess has visited Ten Pony Tower a few times over the years, when she would make seasonal visits to sell her incredibly gorgeous dresses. Homage has emptied out our spare cap supply more than once on a ballroom gown.
The dear is just so adorable at fancy occasions. She's usually the first one, swinging like the world never ended.
Perhaps if you came out of the shadows more, you'd have some fun too.
Now, you see, there's a reason I stick to radio. No pony wants to see this ugly mug. Plus, I did attend one of the winter galas a few years ago. We even danced. It was very nice.
Yes, a masquerade ball. That hardly qualifies.
What can I say? I like being a Mustang of mystery. Now, why don't we get back to you? After years of short visits, I have finally convinced Duchess Rose to settle down to make Ten Pony Tower her new home and her new project. Given enough time, she'll have this place looking better than it did before the war.
He can be very persuasive, but I am looking forward to the restoration. This place is an impressive body of work from the Neo-Deco era. I appreciate the late Mr. Tenpony's tastes. It is a travesty to see the jewel of his business empire left in such shambles. These marble walls deserve to shine again.
So are we still friends, Tenpony? I promise the first thing to be restored will be the fountain in the lobby. And Homage and I believe we're closer to establishing an off-site broadcasting station. We're just waiting to hear back from another friend. So, until then, we have an interview with not only an artisan of utmost class in society, but a member of a bona fide royal family. Duchess, please tell us about yourself.
Well, I was born in what is now called New Mainchester. We have slowly been restoring our home since recolonizing it from the depths of Stable 79. Well, not depths. Stable 79 isn't Tartarus. It's just utilitarian, a function of a style. It still proves to be useful as a power source, hospital, and a few other city essentials that New Mainchester relies on it for.
So you've traveled a ways to be here, then?
Well, I've been traveling the wasteland since my early 20s. But yes, Mainchester is about 200 miles northeast of here, in the Sea of Faust.
You're starting to sound more like a courier than a trader. Nor land, nor sea, nor mutants, nor Tane can stop you.
Oh, hush. We do, thankfully, have a ferry. I'm not about to swim the channel towing a trunk of supplies and merchandise.
Something tells me you could manage it if you wanted to.
Well, a lady must know how to handle herself.
So, Rose Petal, how did you come by such an illustrious title like the Duchess of Mainchester? It isn't self-assigned, is it? Because if so, I'd like to be known as Mr. President DJ Pony from now on.
While I could see some would think that, Mr. President, my title does actually have a place in history. My family's nobility dates back almost 2,500 years.
Wow, that's longer than three or four standing governments. Pretty impressive.
It has been easy to keep track of. My family has always been very regardful of history, especially our own. We've been archiving it meticulously from the very beginning. Since childhood, that was one of the many virtues instilled in me, one that everyone in my family was expected to carry. With every age and every season, we are nothing if not the legacy of days past. That was the tenet, the ideology of my upbringing. It all began with my oldest recorded ancestor, Okrut the Silent. He was a founder and a member of the First Chamber of Nine. The Chamber of Nine was a parliamentary government which united the tribal races of the Foggy Isles. Okrut's children would eventually establish the township of Mainchester, which became the capital and new namesake of one of the nine member islands.
All this talk of starting governments is going to inspire some more crackpots to set up their own little dictatorships. Because it's not like we don't have enough of those already.
I'll say, far too many ponies care more about the crown than they do the country.
Especially when you're stitching a country together from a bunch of smaller tribes. So, besides keeping tabs on your family tree, what was life like on the island?
Well, Mainchester, like many of the other tribes of the Foggy Isles, were predominantly unicorn culture, specializing in runic magics.
Runic magics? You mean like carving a bunch of symbols into a wall and being able to create magic from it?
You're mostly right, except for the very essence of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
You see, runes don't create magic. Ironically, it'd be more accurate to say that they pull it out of thin air.
You're gonna have to explain.
Magic isn't something that's created. It's all around us. It's part of every living being and every object. It circles the Earth in ley lines of concentrated energy. And although it is one energy, it can manifest in so many different ways, different spectrums that certain creatures can be more connected to than others. Pegasi, for instance, are sensitive to a particular spectrum that allows them to fly and interact with clouds. That's the thing so many don't understand. We are all creatures of magic.
So then, what makes unicorns different?
Well, even though we're surrounded by this energy, unicorns have a natural catalyst that allows them to access it more easily than others. In its most basic form, unicorns have the ability to manifest that energy so that the magic controls the object it's flowing through. This is what we call telekinesis, using magic to manipulate the physical world. That's the common spectrum most unicorns have access to. In fact, in many cases, telekinesis is the only kind of magic a unicorn can use.
You know, you're starting to sound like the ghoul doctor. Should I be taking notes, Professor?
Oh, don't get snippy with me. You're the one who asked.
Okay, I suppose you're right. So, runes just pull magic out of whatever wall they're scribbled on?
In a way, but I have a better analogy. Creating a rune spell is like painting a picture. You flip on a light bulb and spend hours painting and arranging the colors on a canvas in every way you like. Then, once you're done, you turn off the light bulb. Now, for anyone else to see what you did, all they have to do is turn on the light for a moment and observe all of its detail and beauty. Runic spells are the same. You put in a massive amount of magical energy at the start, which are the hours running the light bulb to paint it. Then crafting the spell is arranging the colors into the picture. Turning on the light bulb to view the painting is the spark it takes to trigger the spell.
Okay, I think I understand.
That's the way magic was taught to me, at least. The way we treat it in Mainchester. It's not perfect truth, it's just the way we've learned to interpret this energy that surrounds us. If it were easy to understand, they wouldn't call it magic. It's just the way things appear to me. Really, that's all I can give you, my own experience. Tell you how I see the world, and hope it helps somebody.
Now that's what this show is all about.
And Mainchester has built a large part of its culture out of this discipline. In fact, we introduced many new kinds of runic magic to the rest of unicorn kind when the Chamber of Nine officially annexed and became a part of Equestria. One such kind of magic, called Stonescrit, was a key component in the development of the Spell Matrix operating language that many of these pre-war terminals still use to this day.
Talk about coming full circle. I'm feeling smarter already. For a town with such an accomplished contribution to Pony society, why did you end up leaving?
Well, I still visit quite often, but once reaching mayorhood, I felt like I'd contributed all I could to New Manchester. She lies in the capable hooves of my cousin, Duke Highwater. I was never fond of leadership and governance anyway. I was more than happy that he chose to bear the responsibilities.
So, where did you plan on going?
I wasn't sure at the time. I just felt called, like my place and purpose were on the mainland. When I landed ashore, I began seeing how much greater the destruction was, and how it had only decayed further over time. Manchester and the other Foggy Isles suffered relatively little fallout by comparison. This is what confirmed for me how I could do my part for Equestria. I would do everything in my power to make her beautiful once again.
And you have the mark to show for it?
Why, sir, are you asking me to lift my dress?
Why, no. No, that's not what I meant. I just...
You silly colt. See?
It looks like, I'm assuming, your family crest.
A version of it, yes. The original crest was carved into a block of limestone by Oakroot himself. The red and gold coloring and the flourishes were added centuries later. However, the original limestone slab still exists to this day. It was set into one of the walls of Stable 79's atrium.
That must be quite a sight.
It is. Oakroot also engraved a simple spell around its border, so that the crest would glow a soft white in the dark.
It must be nice having such a physical tie to your past. There aren't many things like that left in the Wasteland.
Well, truth be told, the past is what finally drove me to go and explore Equestria.
Oh, really? How so?
You see, it wasn't until adulthood that I began piecing together some less talked about records in our family archives. Remember when I said that our family was made of mostly unicorns?
Yes.
Well, genetics is a funny thing. Although the Foggy Isles were comprised mostly of unicorns, every once in a while an Earth Pony or Pegasus would be born anyway. Which was unfortunate for them, because our family's illustrious magical history with runes and incantations fostered a very strong unicorn bias over time.
How come? I thought you said that every creature is magical in its own way.
Magic flows through everything, but not all living things can access that energy in the same way. For most of our history, it was thought that only unicorns could create and cast runic spells, especially before we came in contact with other creatures and civilizations. Even a fully developed spell requires that spark to activate it, and it's something that Earth Ponies and Pegasi can't naturally do. Even back then, in the days of Oakroot, a bias towards unicorns was forming. They were the wizards, the spell masons, the ones who could command the forces of nature. They thought it was a natural gift, and that Earth Ponies and Pegasi were somehow cursed from birth by having this ability denied to them.
Wow, you can almost feel the love and acceptance from here.
Oh, things got worse. The bigotry soon gave birth to stories and superstitions that further tarnished them. One myth was called The Legend of the Chalice Stone. It told the story of an Earth Pony sorcerer who dabbled in some kind of dark arts to create a gemstone of pure magical energy. He then crushed the stone up into a chalice of wine and drank it. This elixir made him incredibly powerful, but being the villain, he slayed innocent women and children to maintain his power. He was only stopped by Oakroot's grandson, Stoneheart. The two dueled in a castle until Stoneheart cast a spell that ignited the sorcerer in a magical fire. The sorcerer was then thrown down a well which collapsed around him, forming his tomb.
Not exactly a bedtime story.
Not at all, but nonetheless it was read like one. Think about growing up as an Earth Pony in that culture. This continued on for centuries as my hornless ancestors lived out their days as second-class citizens, or even monsters in the eyes of the brothers and sisters. Then, after the Chamber of Nine became a part of Equestria, the Shunda family members got word of the new movement of racial equality in the Princess's Kingdom. One night, during the annual Unity Festival, which celebrated the unification of the Nine Islands, all of our Earth Pony and Pegasi relatives quietly slipped away during the fireworks display. A memoir from that day reflected, "With every flash that dazzled the eye, another leaf did drop or fly. With final burst of evening light, a third the vine was gone from sight."
One third of your whole family? That's quite a loss. And sadly, the world is pretty far from a place of racial harmony. Or harmony at all, for that matter.
Things got better over time, but there was still a definite unicorn preference, even in my own upbringing. It was the kind of thing you don't notice until you're old enough to pick up the subtext in the history books. It was hard for me to read through those accounts again. It tainted many of the views I held of my family and its past. But despite the sugarcoating, our histories reflect the event quite clearly. The group left as one to form their own settlement in the new motherland.
So, you left New Manchester to see if you could track down the remnants of that family line?
That was one of the reasons, yes. And it was very difficult because I had very little to go off of. Following that exodus, my ancestors had all but struck them from our scrolls and history books, casting them as ne'er-do-wells and bad seeds from the start. My family was only ever protective of history that showed us in the best light.
This must have been very hard to deal with, being torn between love and devotion to your family, but at the same time acknowledging their wrongs and mistakes.
Yes. I hoped, by tracking down the remains of that side of our family, I could begin a healing process, or at the very least a grieving process, to pay some of the penance that the unicorns of Manchester owed them.
So, once you reached the mainland, how did you begin your search?
I knew I needed to find historical records, emigration paperwork, census scrolls, something that would hopefully reveal where they had settled. I started seeking out old government buildings and libraries, picking through the ruins one at a time.
Were you out there on your own? There's no way that was safe.
Oh, it wasn't. I narrowly escaped slavers on several occasions. I searched the eastern half of the continent for months before I eventually found myself in a small village named Victo, founded under a propaganda billboard which once read, "Victory" in large letters.
Of course they named after a billboard.
For the most part, it was just another highway-adjacent trading village. But it had one unique attraction. The main marketplace of the village was set up in the exposition hall of the Museum of Classical Arts. Once discovering this, I enjoyed the rest of the afternoon trotting through the exhibits and passing many vendors, much to their dismay. It was a pleasant break from my adventuresome first few months in the equestrian wasteland. There were many displays relating to turn-of-the-millennium fashion to appreciate. But soon, I turned a corner and found myself in the musical section. Music is one art form that I unfortunately have no talent in whatsoever. Fashion and architecture I'm quite capable with, but I would perish if I was ever expected to hold a melody. I almost passed by the section completely, but changed my mind when I saw designs for classical theatres in one corner of the hall. So I went in. I was casually glancing at different information boards when the word Manchester caught my eye. I trotted closer to the display and began reading. It was about a composer, an instrument maker named Fortissimo. He was a Pegasus who had moved to a town in the south with his family from Manchester. Based on the chronology, everything lined up perfectly. These were my missing relatives.
Fantastic! A major breakthrough like that must have been very satisfying.
Oh, it was! The museum exhibit explained that they had pursued some kind of musical profession. After the immigration, they had become known as the Oratorio family. Through the generations, they spread all over Equestria, with many descendants adding to their illustrious musical lineage. One of the more famous ones around the time of the Great War was a symphony mayor named Amoria.
Fascinating! I didn't know Amoria came from such interesting roots, and I play her music all the time. It's good to hear that the Oratorio family, despite their lack of magic, became successful in their own talents.
Yes, and they did not bear the biases of Manchester either. They married other unicorns and didn't seem to have treated their non-musical family members any differently. One of the Oratorios, exceptional at business, became an iron mining tycoon. While gaining fame from music, they were all allowed to live for themselves and were encouraged to follow their own dreams and passions. If only my ancestors had shared that worldview.
So, now that you knew who they were and what became of them, did you have any idea where they might be?
Thanks to the Museum of Classical Arts, I did have one lead. The family still owned a large plantation they had originally settled. It was a manor in the south called Maricello. I plugged my pipbuck into the information terminal and was able to download a map to its location. So, I gathered my things and headed there, hoping to discover more clues when I arrived. It took me a few weeks following rivers and railroad tracks, but I finally made my way down the countryside. Maricello was surrounded on all sides by several thousand acres of swamps and marshlands. I was surprised the oratorios were able to grow anything of substance there, but I assumed it was just one of the many things which had changed for the worse after the war.
I can't even imagine what kind of monsters inhabit those swamps.
I had the good fortune not to meet any such creatures. Whatever lived in the swamps had the decency to leave me alone. I reached the main gates of the manor to find tall black iron bars lining the entire perimeter. The property looked its age, but was luckily untouched by any of the direct explosions of the bombs. Maricello was far from the nearest big city, and fairly secluded, tucked away where it was. The iron bars reflected 200 years of neglect. The gate was a different story, though. Lying in a pile off to one side was the original chain, having been broken, discarded, and left to rust in the dust. The surprising thing to me was how the gate had been resecured. The center bars and hinges were bent and melted right into one another. They didn't have the same rust as the rest of the gate, which led me to believe it must have been done recently.
That sounds extreme. A different chain or lock could have been easily cobbled together. But at least it sounds like someone must have been inside.
And due to its remoteness from any other inhabited area of the wasteland, my hope was high that I would find the oratorios within. I stood at the gate a while, waving at the windows, whistling, and calling as loud as I could. But to my dismay, I met with silence. The mansion was the epitome of antebellum architecture. There were tall white pillars supporting the roofs overhang across the entire front of the building. The sections that weren't red brick matched the white of the pillars. But the paint had chipped and peeled terribly over time, and many of the original grey shingles were scattered around the building, having been broken away by the weather. However, as it stood, the damage could have been much worse. While a few of the windows were cracked, none of them seemed to be broken out at all, and surprisingly, many of them remained intact. I wanted to get a closer look, and I was tired of waiting at the gate, so I decided to use a little magical encouragement. I magically etched a few runes into the largest of the welded metal masses that used to be the gate. With a small spark, the runes glowed a brilliant orange, then exploded into the property, presenting me with a nice pony-sized hole to enter through.
Sometimes it takes the direct approach.
Simple as it were, my walk to the building was slow as I pushed my way through the thick, untamed shrubs. The mutated flora had reclaimed the path and made my passing difficult, even with the machete and boots.
Boots? You mean you weren't dressed in your finest gown for the family reunion?
I'm not so high society that I don't understand that wasteland fashion must be functional as well as fabulous. Most of my travels were in short-length dresses with stockings and gorgeous yet durable high-lace boots.
Fair enough.
Besides, the weather down there in the marshland was horrendously humid. I needed clothing that could breathe. I finally reached the porch and the burgundy-red doors that stood beyond the white pillars. There was a door knocker on each of them, fashioned into the shape of a hydra. I took hold of it and knocked 3 times. After waiting a few moments, I knocked again. But when I knocked the 3rd time, the door creaked open. I pushed open all of the way, which required both hooves because of how heavy it was.
It was probably still easier than unjamming a pneumatic door.
Well, yes, but only slightly. As I walked inside, I was met with a breathtaking sight. This was the centuries-old home, the cornerstone of an illustrious musical family, and the decor matched appropriately. There were 2 sweeping staircases to either side of the center atrium, which circled up to the 2nd floor. Grand chandeliers were hung with silver chains, matching the finely cut crystals. The ceiling itself was painted with the elaborate scenes of ponies frolicking and singing. Wall murals reflected different achievements from famous oratorios. The mural farthest to the west showed a Moria performing at the Grand Royal Exposition in front of a crowd of 100,000. Pictures and other ornaments covered the soft lavender walls, the most prominently displayed items being instruments, Horns, harps, woodwinds, lyres, and strings were each hung with dignity beside a portrait of its owner and a candelabra.
It sounds like a museum in its own right.
Oh, it was, and an absolutely elegant one at that. However, the most distinguishing feature of all stretched forth from the heart of the manor, like the arms of a giant squid, the massive pipe organ. Its polished brass pipes spread like tendrils up the walls of the manor, encompassing the atrium. It was as if the mansion itself was a single beautiful instrument.
That sounds incredible. I've been in radio a long time, but I don't think I've ever seen a pipe organ so big in person.
Oh, it was so well preserved. The wood was smooth with an oil-stained finish, and the pipes were still quite reflective, scattering the natural light in the from the windows. I sat down at the bench and ran my hooves over the keys, but they didn't make a sound. Then to the right of the console, I spotted a gold-plated lever. I pulled it and was startled by the spark when the metal made contact. I felt a gentle vibration from the bench seat accompanied by a faint hum as dust coughed out of the cutaways in the pipes. I pressed on one of the keys and shivered as a low B note reverberated throughout the halls. I pressed a few more keys before the discordant sound started to wear on my senses. "If only I were capable of making you sing," I said to the ivory slabs.
But at least that meant there was an active power source energizing the air compressors. Someone must have been maintaining the generator.
Which is what I figured as well. So if my horrendous musical rendition weren't signal enough, I began calling out again to see if anyone was there, but was met with silence. Not satisfied, I powered down the organ and decided to continue exploring the manor. Behind each of the two staircases was a closet door. I pressed down on the handles, but found them to be locked. I gave them a few hard knocks, but they sounded like they had been double-bolted. I don't really have any lock-picking skills, despite being well-equipped in bobby pins, so I decided to just move on. I began walking the ground floor to see if I could find signs of anyone. The west wing contained the kitchen and dining areas. The main dining hall at the end was spacious enough to host over 100 guests. Surprisingly, all the fine dishes and silverware were still there. Nothing was raided, broken, or missing.
Really? I was going to say, if raiders had been there, I'd expect them to have at least taken some of the silverware or fine china. And speaking of fine china...
A few biscuits, with a cup of nice sunrise tea.
Why, thank you, dear. You're much too kind. I am quite parched. It feels like I've been talking forever.
You have to admit that you're probably the only pony in this tower that's chattier than I am.
Well, I would disagree, Mr. Nationwide Broadcast Audience.
But I don't do this for my health. I provide a service for all of the good ponies of the equestrian wasteland.
And a sparkle cola for you.
Laser Lemon? We still had one of these?
You put it on my side of the fridge again.
Well, shoot, it must be my birthday. Wait, what about my biscuits?
Sorry, call dibs on the last ones.
Fine then, I wasn't hungry anyway.